friends. It is Saturday. It is April 7th, 2018. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola broadcasting from the Chicago suburbs. Thanks for joining me today at republicbroadcasting.org. I encourage you to visit and subscribe to SpingolaSpeaks.net. Be sure and look at the top and click Your Health Matters. I also encourage you to subscribe to Willie'sBlog.blogspot.com and ScreeningSandyHook.net. During the program, email questions or comments to comment@spingola.email. Visit our friendly chat room at spingola.chatango.com. If you attempted to see who is going to be my guest today and tried to view the April 2018 page, you found that it was, well, it wasn't there. It was just a big blank. That's because I'm having a problem uploading pages. I have a ticket in with the service that hosts my website, and hopefully they will get the problem fixed soon. It's pretty frustrating. Despite the fact that the schedule page is down, we have a fabulous guest today. My guest today for the first 2 hours is Thomas Goodrich, the author of numerous books, including Hellstorm, The Death of Nazi Germany, 1944 to 1947, which came out in 2010. And his latest, I'm not going to say last, he says it says last book, but that's so ominous. I just want to say latest book, Summer 1945, Germany, Japan, and the Harvest of Hate. He has also written several other great books. His website is thomasgoodrich.com. Now, at the top of his website, he says, born and raised in the American Midwest as Michael Thomas Goodrich. I have lived around. Before I began writing books, I printed watercolors for a meager existence in New England. I am an unabashed tree hugger and animal advocate. I love the natural world, especially pure prairie. But I'll stop there. I've just always called him Thomas. Today, he's going to be Mike. Okay? From now on, you're Mike. For me.
Well, good. That works for me, too.
Okay. It's just wonderful to talk to a good friend. I consider you a good friend. And anyway, please be sure and visit his website, thomasgoodrich.com. And the other website that I hope that you will visit is hellstormdocumentary.com. Now, if you think your life is filled with trials and tribulations, then you need to read Mike's latest book, which will put things into perspective. If you think you have problems, if you think your website is down, well, if you know your website's messed up and might have a few other issues going on in your life, you need to read this book. And thank you for the paperback copy. I bought it also on Kindle, and it is heartbreaking to say the least. And the way that you've intertwined the stories between Germany and Japan is wonderful. The thing that I like about your writing, Mike, is that you put your heart into it. You have the ability to write, to bring all this emotion to the forefront so that people can picture what's going on and understand what's going on. And you tell it just exactly like it is. And it's terrific. Right now I'm 58% into the book. And you're talking about Japan. And one of the things you said in the book about Eisenhower being a war criminal. He is the biggest war criminal, I think, that we've ever suffered from, or that they've ever suffered from. We didn't suffer from him. When you compare it to the problems and the consequences of the My Lai massacre, what you've done with your book is that you've exposed him as a war criminal in Germany, and what they did in Japan is just horrific. And right now, you're talking about Hiroshima, and oh gosh. So where do you want to start?
Well, thank you for that compelling and thoughtful introduction. One of the first things you said that resonated well with me is that after you know these stories and what happened to these people, very quickly, your own problems, well, you almost have no problems once you relate them to what's going on in these books. That's been my experience, like yours, I'm sure, like a lot of people who've read these books, that just when we feel pity for ourselves and feel sorry for ourselves, then it wouldn't hurt to pick up something like these books and see how really, really bad life can be if you're lucky enough to live that bad life. And that's pretty much, Dan, have been my experience ever since the completion of Hellstorm, is that I have no problems. I will never have any problems. My life, there is nothing wrong with it. It's what I make of it.
Right.
These people had no choice. I do. At least we do for a while. But I agree with you. It's people have told me that they're different people after they read Hellstorm, and now after reading this thing too, this summer 1945. I agree with them. Yes, I was a different person after Hellstorm came out, and it would almost seem to some people, I suppose, masochistic to keep writing these books. Well, let's put it this way: there's only two books, and as you noted, I said this would be my last, and right now I'm pretty set on it. Quite honestly, I've got to. I'm getting old, and I've got to experience a little more life, and hopefully some fun things and some happiness. And so I just don't see myself ever doing anything else like this. But I felt I had to. It wasn't some masochistic urge in me to put all this in print and tell everybody the terrible stories. And I felt no one else was doing this. And after I got to researching, especially in Hellstorm and in this most recent book, then I knew they had to be written. They weren't being written about. And some of the worst, in fact, no, let's don't even mess around with some of the worst crimes the world has ever known were committed in World War II by the victors. We know that now. We all know that now. There's no doubt about it. The worst crimes the Earth has ever experienced were committed in World War II, and nobody knew about it. And let's put it this way. Once you have a real understanding of this, then how can you not write about it? How can you allow this to just lay another 70 or 100 years or 1,000 years or forever, when you know what went on and you refuse to do something about it? Well, this was my way of doing something about it, letting the world know exactly what was done in their name during World War II. The impetus for this next book, for summer 1945, was something like this. I thought I'd seen, heard everything in Hellstorm. I thought there was nothing more to add to this picture of horror of World War II, and then until I started doing research and what occurred in Japan. And when you think that things cannot get any worse, they do. Now, I'm not saying the Germans suffered less. I'm just saying that what we knew about Japan and the war, let's put it this way, everything you think you knew about Japan and the war against America, forget it. Just forget it. Please just forget it. It's not true. It's a propaganda piece, just like the war with Germany was. We came away with this good war scenario. Good war. And we came away with something similar with Japan. Yes, they sneak attacked us at Pearl Harbor, and we paid them back tenfold. We got even with them, and then that's that. Suppose the war is over, Japan is defeated. Now we can get back to having babies in America and mowing our lawns and tending our gardens and forget about it. Not so at all. But when I realized what happened in Japan, I felt the need to put a book together with both sides of the earth, that is Europe and Asia, what was going on. And what was going on in Europe, you and I know, and maybe some of the listeners know from reading Hellstorm, was something so evil and fiendish, diabolical, and criminal. Yes, criminal, that's a given. But that was also going on the other side of the earth. With aces and spades, I might say. True, the Jewish power grid in the world, they wanted to destroy Germany in the worst way. In fact, there's many parts in summer 1945 that are very similar to parts in Hellstorm, the death of Nazi Germany. Because it's inescapable. If you're going to write about Germany and Japan at this period, and by the way, this period, summer 1945, that's the first summer of so-called peace for Germany and the last summer of terrible, terrible war for Japan. But to know what happens on both sides of the world, I think you have to. You have to know how far evil had spread around the globe. And as I mentioned, the Jewish supremacy, world supremacy, they wanted Germany destroyed in the worst way. And this is brought out in both books. One facet of this I did not understand during Hellstorm was that it was a cool, cold, calculated, methodical destruction of Germany. No doubt about it. There was no accident to this. In fact, Henry Morgenthau, the Secretary of Treasury under the man I consider the world's greatest war criminal, that's Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Secretary of Treasury Morgenthau, a Jew, he and other Jews surrounding Roosevelt, they were determined that Germany would not survive this war. They were determined to destroy Germany utterly. It was called the Morgenthau Plan, named for Henry Morgenthau. Actually, I believe it was devised by an underling there under Roosevelt, Henry Dexter White, another Jew. But this was it. I mean, this was basically them saying Germany will not survive. This is it. We're going to destroy it utterly. And Morgenthau's given reason for this methodical, murderous plan of destroying Germany and its people utterly was because of World War I. They blamed that, of course, on Germany for starting that war, and now he said there's another war. And he and Roosevelt, in their own words, I've got the words, plotted out the utter destruction of Germany. That is, first, during war, kill as many as you possibly can. By doing that, I mean not just the soldiers facing the Soviets and the Americans and the British and the French, not just the soldiers, but the civilians themselves, the people in the cities. After there was any viable military targets left, the Allied Air Forces, the 8th Air Force with the Americans and the RAF with the British, they started targeting all German cities, Berlin, the capital, Munich, Frankfurt, Hamburg, all those cities, men, women, and children, and that's who they were trying to kill, literally trying to kill the men, women, and children with firebombs. After the war, when Eisenhower went to work, of course, killing as many helpless, disarmed German POWs as he possibly could with various stratagems, various devices, including the redesignation of these POWs into something called disarmed enemy forces to avoid the Geneva Convention, which, by the way, Trump, Eisenhower and the rest of them, they laughed at the Geneva Convention. So I don't know why there was a big effort on their part to circumvent the Geneva Convention and the Red Cross, because they laughed at it anyway. But anyway, by him, his little bit of ledger to me, by transforming helpless, disarmed German POWs into DEFs, disarmed enemy forces, that was his method of getting rid of roughly, I don't know what the actual number is. Somebody's going to find out one of these days, but I've heard it estimated anywhere between 800,000 to 1.5 million helpless, disarmed German POWs died from starvation, dehydration, lack of medicine, often in many cases murder, outright murder. That's the Morgenthau Plan in action. But there's things in summer 1945 that I found in the research that is not in Hellstorm, many things, as a matter of fact, was this deliberate attempt at starvation of the civilian population, withholding foods, food that were surrounding Germany aplenty in the various nations, including Switzerland. They could have easily brought in more than enough food to feed all the German population. Right. No, they don't have to feed them turkey and lobster and steaks. They can feed them the normal stuff, the breads, the things that can keep people alive, but they didn't. And then, even worse than that, they wouldn't even allow the farmers, the race that's known best for being great farmers, would not even allow them seed to plant crops for the following year so that people might eat something. They denied them material. They denied them implements to repair their own tractors when they broke down. This deliberate plan of starvation. Deanna, no one that I know of has done a really accurate estimate on how many German civilians, men, women, and children, died after the war of starvation. It's in the hundreds of thousands. I'm not going to go way out on a limb and say something radical, but these are things I didn't know until I went to work on summer 1945. The degree of starvation and there's no one hiding this. It's understood. But for instance, the new American president, the new great American president, Harry S. Truman, he's about as bad as FDR, if you ask me.
Right.
When people begged him, when well-meaning people, Americans, British, Canadians, begged Truman to start feeding the Germans. The children are dying daily. They're dropping dead in the streets. The people can't even work at their machines, can't dig a ditch because they're too weak. And they begged him to allow some food to get in. Truman laughed. He said, look, the Germans got themselves in this fix. Don't expect me to get them out of it. Basically, eventually they will get some attention. That's what he said. They will get some attention.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, after thousands, hundreds of thousands are dead, they got some attention, all right. But yes, this was stuff like this, including the American rapes. I had really underestimated that in Hellstorm. I didn't have enough of the time to put in that book, but it's my opinion that there wasn't an appreciable difference between the degree of rape by the Soviets and the Americans. It seemed very similar all the way to me. But so many revelations in this next book.
Wow. All righty. We are going to take a 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. and knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest the first 2 hours today is Thomas Goodrich. And he was raised as Michael Thomas Goodrich, so he is now Mike. So, Mike, the thing that is so interesting about the book is that you've taken this short period of time, it's a relatively short period of time, and you concentrated on two countries. And of course, they were compatriots. They had an agreement that if one was attacked, the other one would support, and it was a way of getting America into the war in Germany, and they were the ones that provoked Japan to attack. They watched the procession of the Japanese from the time they left Japan. They knew that they were going to be attacked. Where they were going to be attacked, they had moved all the newer submarines and ships and whatnot out of the way, and sent them over to Europe. And so, most of the time, we just hear about the Bataan Death March, and which you reference in the book, and that was not something that was what we've heard about it. Is that it was deliberate, and that the fact is, Japan wasn't ready for a war. They didn't have the transportation necessary. But we've just heard so many things that are not true or that have been focused on that we need to rethink and get re-educated on. And that's what you've done in the book, Summer, 1945, Germany, Japan, and the Harvest of Hate, that you've taken this relatively short period of time and told what really happened. When we think, as you said, we think the war is over in Europe, but it really isn't. There was still the hate and the intentional starvation of the German population, children, everybody. I just can't imagine starving a child, starving anybody. But that was American policy. It is just mind-boggling to think that the military did this in the so-called Good War. And I had an uncle that was in the military in World War II. He was never the same after he came home. And I've heard other people say the same about their relatives. They either never want to talk about it, they don't talk about it, or their behavior manifests some sort of disruptive, unusual behavior that they did not exhibit before they left. Nobody can do that to other people and remain normal.
Yes, it was truly the greatest evil that has ever beset the earth, in my opinion. Nothing like this has ever come close. This entire episode called World War II, that in many ways continues to this very day. The Morgenthau Plan, as I mentioned, this was in place. Now, it wasn't written anywhere that I know, but it was understood, absolutely understood, not only by FDR, but even after he died, Truman, the person who followed him. This was their plan for Germany. There is no doubt about it. And Deanna, it's more than just Eisenhower. I don't know how to describe what he did. This truly makes him one of the most evil men to ever stalk the earth. But what he did, and his not just what he did, but how he did it, and what he said while he was doing it. He loved doing this. I mean, he wanted to kill everyone he could possibly get a hold of. And things like this that I didn't know about in Hellstorm that's in this book, I found out so many new things. The mass slaughter that took place of soldiers right after the war, of German soldiers, of Waffen-SS, of the SS in the German Wehrmacht. Mass slaughter. Now, I'm not talking about the ones in the death camps. They've been reserved for a very slow, terrible, grinding, painful death. I'm talking about the ones, the moment the war, so-called war, is over, the ones that were slaughtered outright. By the hundreds, the SS, the Waffen-SS, even soldiers in the Wehrmacht were slaughtered hours after the final capitulation, surrender of Germany. I've got accounts of hundreds upon hundreds of SS men just being lined up, marched ahead, and all killed, murdered. Murdered in fields, murdered up against walls. There's an account of 700 SS in one group, 500 in another, and so on and so on. Slaughtered, mass slaughter. And of those who weren't slaughtered outright, some were beaten so badly that they probably wish they were dead. They're, to this very day, in fact, I just saw an entire album, huge album, of photographs just after the war. I'm talking hours after the war, days maybe. Of people, the bodies, people being beaten half to death, soldiers. What are they?
Sick. All righty, we'll be back in 3 minutes.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read a few from Amazon.com. Dr. Sam Serino reviewed the Extendivite product. Good ingredients, feeling much better since taking product. It seems that the tablets work well. Once again, thank you for your product. My acid reflux is really improved thanks to the Extendivite. Together with my thumb joints, the pain is gone and I'm able to grip things much better. My friend has peripheral arterial disorder, and their lower legs were hurting at a red color, but thankfully, there has been a significant improvement. Kind regards, Janice. My husband feels a big difference using Extendivite. Thank you. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life.
All righty, welcome back. Our guest is Michael Thomas Goodrich. He is the author of Summer 1945, Germany, Japan, and the Harvest of Hate. I was just looking up some things about the Morgenthau Plan, and when you look at the encampments that they had and the people that the Germans who were coming back from the east, all those people that were killed, it was truly a war to get rid of Germany and Germans. It wasn't about Hitler. It wasn't about that. It was about getting rid of Germans as a people.
I agree. Even FDR said as much. He said something to the effect of what you just said, basically. It's not about Hitler. It's not about Nazism. It's about the Germans.
Right.
They've got to go. And one of the planks, so-called, of the Morgenthau Plan was for those who didn't die in Eisenhower's death camps, or those who didn't starve to death in the streets of Germany, there was a policy going to be coming out very quickly of sterilization of Germans. And it's interesting that in the research for this book, I found out that this policy of sterilization, much of it had nothing to do with chemicals or medical operations to sterilize a man. It had everything to do with actually crushing his testicles.
Right.
I'm not making this up.
No, I know you're not.
I wish I were. But you know, one of the other aspects is torture. Torture on a greater scale than I ever imagined. And part of the torture had to do with crushing testicles. They had machines to do these things. I mean, these are the accounts that I should mention this to some people who don't know anything about these books, is that it's not me as an author telling the story. It's the people themselves telling the story. I think it's easy to kill somebody like me, the author, but you cannot kill the message when it's in the words of the people themselves. At least I wouldn't try doing that. It's not going to work. So that's where I'm getting this information from. For instance, prior to the research for this book, summer 1945, I had thought, well, that's as far as sterilization, castration, ruining some man's testicles, I thought that's probably part of just this attempt to coerce and force false statements from witnesses, giving them a really tough time. Don't forget that G2 was composed almost entirely of Jewish refugees who had fled Germany in 39, actually called them 39ers. They came back with the Americans and Brits, very much like the commissars, the Jewish commissars of the Soviet Union were coming in with the Red Army. And of course, they came in with hell in their neck. Many of them probably still believe a lot of the propaganda against Germany, just like everybody else, just like Gentiles did. And so if you can imagine these people coming in, G2, which is supposedly intelligence, that's what it's called, acting as interrogators, examiners, people who, these are the ones that actually lay hands on the Germans, the victims that are being tortured. There must have been tens of thousands of torture victims. I certainly didn't have time to count them all, and nobody has done that for me. But there had to be tens of thousands. And when I'm talking about torture, I'm not just talking about a Chinese water drip or sleep deprivation, anything like that. I'm talking about actual physical, hands-on malice. Drawing blood, sticking things in the people. And above all, yes, crushing the testicles. That's part of the program. One American judge, I believe, a jurist, mentioned to one of the people talking in the book that of the 197, I believe it was, 197 men that he examined who were put under this torture to force false confessions from them, of the 197, something like 195 had their testicles absolutely crushed beyond repair. They would never have a child. And so I think, in a sense, the Morgenthau Plan meant the physical destruction of male reproductive organs. I think that's literally what that meant. And so this is going on in so-called peace. This is not during the war. I mentioned before the break about the rape of women. This went on after the war as bad as it did in the Soviet area. I've got too many accounts now of American rape to ignore this. It was a policy. It was a policy, as simple as I can make it. Officers looked the other way or they laughed. They allowed it to go on. One officer made sure that every German in one town he was in control of posted on the outside of their doors who and what their names were and their ages inside the home. In other words, making it much, much easier for his men to rape the women inside there. They knew exactly who they were going for. Priests, they talk about this. We're talking about the western part of Germany now, not the eastern part. I think I described that pretty well in Hellstorm, but this is what we Americans did in the western part after the war. The rape was just pervasive, absolutely pervasive. They laughed about it. They gang raped. They took children just age 6 up to 90. So this is also going on over there. And this is the reason we have not heard about this at any point in the last 70 years. One of the main reasons is because of something called the Office of War Information. This was a body, an entity of the U.S. Army that policed its reporters, its journalists, so-called journalists. These are men, maybe a few women thrown in there too, but they're mostly men by the hundreds who follow the armies reporting on what they see to a point. They're under orders that we're all in this together. It's a war effort. And the journalists are told basically what they can and cannot report on. If they break any of these rules, they'll be gone and probably ruined for the rest of their lives. They'll never work at another newspaper in America again, as simple as that. And so what we ultimately have is a group of individuals called journalists who are tagging along with the army, who formerly in peace were probably very diligent and very thoughtful reporters of the news as they saw it. Now they're suddenly nothing but a herd of propagandists who follow the army, who deify the good guys. That is the greatest generation, the Americans. They deify them. They're always good. They always do right things. They never do wrong things. And you can read it in the reports. It's always something great that they've done. Whereas the other side, the Germans, they're vilified, denigrated. Anything bad that Germans do is exaggerated to the point that it's a major world crime type of thing. And that's what we've got reporting on the war to the American public. And so it's small wonder why people like Tom Brokaw and others talk about the greatest generation. That's probably what they actually believe, quite honestly, instead of the propaganda. The Office of War Information was, in my opinion, a criminal organization from the get-go. There's no way you can pass on this sort of information about Americans all good, German all bad, without it being a crime, in my opinion, because it gets people killed, quite honestly. Something else that I found out, and I instinctively knew this was true, because once I realized that the Jews followed the Americans and British in from the West, and the Jews followed the Russians in from the East, I knew what was going to happen. They were going to run loose in Germany and do anything they wanted, and they did. They had a carte blanche to do virtually anything with impunity. We're talking about killing Germans, raping Germans, brutalizing, enslaving, and above all, torturing Germans. In fact, there were gangs of Jews running loose in Germany that were poisoning Germans. Some tried to, well, some actually did poison bread supplies, and people died from that, thousands. They also tried to poison water sources in Munich, Hamburg, Frankfurt, and all the major cities. So they're doing this with impunity. No one's risking anything. This is after the war. This is what Germany is like. It's a land without laws. It's a land, I can't imagine any place on earth I would have rather not been ever, ever Germany after World War II. But on the other side, the flip side of this is Japan. While I'm, as you know, going through Germany, I basically go from chapter to chapter. I try to give the reader an idea of what's going on in Europe at one moment and what's going on in Japan or Asia the next. I want the world to know how vast and how overwhelming evil was in the world, the whole world, not just Europe, but the rest of the world, how
right.
enormous this was.
I like that you did that. It let us view or read about Japan, and then you go back to Germany. I think it would have lost its effect if you had done half the book on Japan, half the book on Germany. But to interweave it was very effective, I think.
You know, I didn't. I've never seen that done before, and
do a lot of stuff that no one's done before.
Well, hopefully it's all done well.
It is, Mike.
But I wanted people to know, okay, I grew up hating the Japanese. I grew up just like about every other American boy after the war hating the Japanese. Why wouldn't we? Because we were raised with that. I mean, that's all we saw on TV and the movies. It was the evil, sneaky Japs doing something depraved, something vicious, something horrible. Whether it's shooting down innocent civilians or machine-gunning American pilots as they're trying to jump out of their airplanes and their parachutes, just absolutely murdering them. Let's not forget, yes, Pearl Harbor, the day that will live in infamy, the deliberate and unprovoked attack on Pearl Harbor. Believe me, it was provoked all the way. FDR and his henchmen, they worked night and day to back Japan into a corner, and it worked. Japan, you know, I don't want to get too deep into this because it is a little arcane and it becomes a little more complex because I probably can't tell it well. Hopefully I wrote it well, but I can't tell it well about how the Japanese were backed into a box. People say, well, nobody forced them to attack. Well, they did too. They absolutely
did. Yes,
they
did.
And
they
I'll tell
did.
You what, Japan had been at war in China for the past 10 years before Pearl Harbor. They had been trying to carve out a claim of colonies in Asia, Southeast Asia, China, Manchukuo, places like that, because very simply, Japan was an emerging nation. And they, Japan had harbored this idealistic image of the British Empire, how grand and great it was. And they aspired to that. If they were going to be a great nation, and they planned on it, then they're going to have to look at what the British did. And that was part of their reason for going into Asia for these colonies. Of course, they wanted the raw materials that they didn't have in Japan, the rubber, the oil, things like that. But this was an emerging nation, just like many emerging nations do. And the Americans, as the 1930s progressed, and the British, started putting the... promptly started threatening Japan over its activities in the colonies, in Asia, insinuating that this was somehow criminal, merciless, it was a terrible thing they were doing. And many Japanese leaders were not fooled by that type of talk, because the Americans and British had been ruthless colonizers for over 100 years, both of them. And so for them to start hypocritically criticizing the Japanese for what they're doing, when they'd been doing it all along, one Japanese leader, I'm sure with a laugh, said, just when we learn how to play poker, they want us to play bridge.
Right.
And so that's, as we get closer to 1939, that's the beginning of the war in Europe, the Americans and the British really start threatening Japan. America places embargoes on vital materials that Japan needs to survive as an industrial nation. And they wanted to be in the worst way. They were a rising people. And by the way, I want to mention this because I'm sure I'll forget it. The Japanese, prior to Pearl Harbor, were known as a... Okay, I don't want to say too many words here because I don't want to give the wrong impression. But they were known as a honest, worthwhile, noble people. And now, that can't be said about a lot of Asians. That cannot be said. We know that from experience. But it can be said about the Japanese. They were called the Prussians of the Orient because there were so many similarities between them and Europeans. They had a lot of the same opinions and beliefs and honors. And, so prior to that, we had no problem at all coexisting with Japan. In fact, we actually got along rather well, I would say, prior to Pearl Harbor. But eventually FDR, when his attempts at stoking a war with Germany itself after 1939, after the war in Europe began, when he could not incite a war with Germany, which he tried mightily to do by giving Britain 50 U.S. destroyers to fight Germany with, also trying to death charge German submarines, freezing assets, things like that. He couldn't provoke Germany into some sort of act of war. So he turned toward Japan and thought that might be easier. He and his gang of conspirators, they really went to work on this. And I think probably many of your listeners, know a little bit about this, about the embargo on vital products. But they may not know that FDR actually sent two American naval cruisers into Japanese waters trying to stoke anything, any act of war against Japan. This is before Pearl Harbor, too, by the way. It sounds very similar to many other American attempts in history to stoke wars, some successful, some not. But the Japanese didn't fall for that. They knew what the U.S. was doing. They had an idea of what they were doing. Japan, as you mentioned, Deanna, or in the show, Germany and Japan had a defense pact. Yes, you're right about them being allies, Axis. They called themselves the Axis along with Italy. And as we get closer to December 1941, the acts increase, the American acts, the threats, the humiliations. Japan had tried for the past year, prior to Pearl Harbor, to seek a peaceful way out of this. They knew they couldn't be American. They knew they had no business at all going to war with America. They weren't looking for a war. And I'll continue after the break.
All righty. We'll be right back in 3 minutes.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $500? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsight.com to make it happen. May 5th is the last day you will hear this offer on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a two-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Do you or a loved one suffer migraine headaches? Listen to what scientist Kurt Hendricks has to say.
35 million people in the United States suffer with debilitating migraines. If you or a loved one are one of them, you need to know about MigRelief. Hi, I'm Kurt Hendricks, the scientist that formulated and patented the MigRelief migraine formula. MigRelief is a non-prescription dietary supplement recommended by neurologists, pharmacists, and pediatricians to address nutritional deficiencies in both adults and children over 2 with migraines. Try MigRelief for 3 months and see the powerful difference it can make in your life or get your money back, no questions asked. Go to MIG911.com or call 800-MIG-7354. You can change your life today.
So if you suffer from migraines, don't wait. Call 800-MIG-7354. That's 800-MIG-7354 or visit MIG911.com.
Our guest today is Michael Thomas Goodrich. He is the author of Summer, 1945, Germany, Japan, and the Harvest of Hate. Okay, pick up where you left off.
Japan, they had been trying to reach an agreement with the U.S. throughout that summer. They could see where this was headed. FDR was, he seemed dead bent on war, and he was, of course. And I think they appreciated why he was trying to goad them into some sort of conflict, because they knew that he and his Jewish advisors really wanted to get at war in Germany. That's what their focus was. That's what it had been all along. And this was their backdoor way of getting into it. But they had been sending out, they're not at war technically, but they are in another sense. And they had been sending out peace feelers to the U.S. How can we reach an understanding? How can we avoid this? Whatever it is that's coming, how can we avoid it? We need to work this out, and we will. In other words, they were willing to make big concessions, the Japanese. Roosevelt, the reason Japan was so desperate to seek a peace understanding is because they knew they could not win this war. this came to war, they knew that, as one American said, the Secretary of Navy, Knox, said, we can whip Japan in 3 months. He laughed. And it was understood among almost all American leaders that this would not be a fight. And guess what? Even the Japanese knew this. They realized that they were a small, almost feudal power facing a huge giant in virtually everything that the Japanese didn't have. Raw resources, technology, industry, the military. And they knew that this was a fight they couldn't win, so they were desperately trying to avoid it. Roosevelt didn't even respond to their peace treaties. Did not even respond. This was his way of rubbing the Japanese face in it, humiliating them. And don't forget, the Japanese then, at least, not so much now, but then were an extremely proud people. Extremely proud, and that's how they earned their name, the Prussians of the Orient, because they were a rather noble type of people that had placed honor above all else. To cut to the chase, yes, the Japanese did fall into the trap because they felt they had no other option. They had to at least try, at least fight the war and hope to win, rather than just simply surrender and give it all away for nothing. And so they did. They attacked the Pearl Harbor, and as you noted, this is a big-time setup. You can see it everywhere. It's so clear now that we wonder how we missed it all these years. But as you can imagine, this, a race that was formerly known for their honor and dignity now, Pearl Harbor, they've been transformed almost overnight by the American media into a race of rats, of dirty Japs, of everything but human. They were snakes, they were cockroaches, they were something to be slaughtered outright. No messing around with them anyway. These were no longer humans. They were something merely to be killed. And that's the pattern, that's the template for the rest of the war for the next 4 or 5 years, is they deserve to be killed.
Right. Or put in concentration camps all over the United States. Okay, we'll be right back. We're at the top of the hour. Back in 3 minutes.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.